If you would please remain standing for the reading of our gospel lesson this morning from the gospel according to Luke, the 9th chapter, beginning with verse 10 and going through verse 17a. Luke chapter 9, beginning with verse 10. When the disciples returned, they told Jesus everything they had done. Then he slipped quietly away with them toward the town of Bethsaida. But the crowds found out where he was going and they followed him. And he welcomed them, teaching them about the kingdom of God and curing those who were ill. Late in the afternoon, the 12 disciples came to him and said, "Send the crowds away to the nearby villages and farms so that they can find food and lodging for the night. There is nothing to eat in this deserted place." But Jesus said to them, "You feed them." "Impossible," they protested. "We have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Or are you expecting us to go and to buy enough food for this whole crowd?" For there were about 5,000 men there. "Just tell them to sit on the ground in groups of about 50 each." So the people all sat down. Jesus took the 5 loaves and 2 fish, looked up toward heaven, and asked God's blessing on the food. Breaking the loaves into pieces, he kept giving the bread and fish to the disciples to give to the people. They all ate as much as they wanted. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. As we have thought over the past weeks about why we come to here, why do we come to this place? Why do we gather? We began with talking about prayer, that we come to give our hearts, to give our lives, to give our wills to Him. And many times that's a struggle. That we wrestle, you know, like Jacob did. And we struggle to really give up ourselves and we don't know how to do that, but we struggle with that. And that prayer is a lot like that. We talked about being disciples, that we have to take up our cross, we have to follow Him, we have to die to ourselves and follow Him. And that's part of what it means. That's who it is for us to be as disciples, that we follow Him. And last week we talked about worship and about, you know, Isaiah's vision. And that he saw God high and lifted up and his train filled the temple. And that he saw his holiness and he saw his unholiness. And he says, you know, "I'm undone. I can't, you know, I'm a sinful man." But then God comes and he cleanses him. And in the midst of that, Isaiah responds to the invitation, "Yes, I'll go." So we think about, we gather in this place to worship. We come to worship. And worship has become, you know, just one of those things I talked about last week. You know, we're talking about worship wars. You know, are we going to do worship this way or are we going to do worship that way? Or are we going to do worship a little bit of both ways? Or are we just going to scrap everything and start over? You know, what is it that we're going to do and what is worship? Worship really is just a word that means that we give something praise. We give something its worth. So we come and we say, "God, you are worthy of our time. You are worthy of our lives." And so ultimately that is what worship is. Now, you know, sometimes I've heard in contemporary worship, they said, "Well, we're going to have a time of worship now, and then once the time of worship is over, the preacher will come and give us a message." You know. And then the flip side of that, a lot of preachers, they think that, you know, that everything that you do in worship, you know, that's just all preliminaries to the sermon. And that's not true either. It's all together. And we do things to mark our worship and that helps us to worship. And yesterday as I was mowing the grass, I was thinking about this and thinking about, you know, what are the things that mark us and what we do and how we do it. And I got to thinking also back to a friend of mine posted on his Facebook page this week. He said, "This Saturday starts my religion." You know, LSU starts football. But then he was also quick to add, Christianity is not a religion. It's a relationship. And that's very true. And then as I was thinking about that yesterday and mowing, you know, and I thought, well, you know, how is football like a religion? And so let's just kind of run through that a little bit. If you were to go to a UT ball game, what is the call to worship? Does anybody know? It's football time in Tennessee, you know? Now, you know, before that you have the procession, don't you? The Vol walk. And then you have another procession to go through the T. And then you have the call to worship. And then, you know, there are songs and everybody knows when to stand and sing, right? Everybody's kind of dressed appropriately. You know, you're all there together. And just like sometimes in church, there are people there who are for you and there are people who are against you. And that's true. You'll be honest. It's true. Now, I'm not saying that what people do at Neyland Stadium or, you know, at Georgia or at Ann Arbor is worship. Now, for some people it is. For some people it truly is worship. But we know, you know, I love football and I love basketball and I love all these things and I love sports and I'm a fan. Sometimes I can be a fan addict, you know. But I don't worship it. It's not my life. I do not sacrifice for my team. So what is worship? I mean, you know, some of those things we do too. And it's interesting how you can overlay that over so many things. The call to worship, the procession, the knowing when to stand up and sit down and all these things. Ultimately, I think the reason why some people worship at football games or basketball games or whatever it is because, just like the rest of us and like everyone, they are hungry. They are hungry for community. They are hungry for meaning. They're hungry for something outside of themselves that's bigger than they are. I can remember as a child, coming in from playing, I lived out in the country, and that was, you know, before video games and all that stuff, and we'd be outside all day long, and I would come in and say, Mom, you know, when's supper going to be? I'm starving. Well, I wasn't really starving. I was hungry, a little, you know, in comparison to a lot of people in the world, but I was hungry. And I needed something to re-energize me. I needed something from outside of myself that I could not get for myself so that I could live. Now we know what that hunger's like. But we also know other hungers too. Oftentimes we hunger for solitude. We hunger for companionship. We hunger for community, affection, acceptance, recognition, love, meaning, and purpose. There's not a person who has ever lived that does not hunger for those things. And it's interesting, of all that list and a whole other, you know, probably a much longer list, the only thing on that list that you can fulfill yourself is solitude. We have to have all those other things from outside of ourselves. And we know what those hungers are like. So we come to worship because we are hungry. We long and we hunger for a vision like Isaiah had, to see God, to see Him high and lifted up. We long for that. We long for that experience. And we as United Methodists believe very strongly in experiencing Jesus, experiencing the new birth, experiencing new life, experiencing the God who is high and lifted up. Deep down we know that we long to give ourselves to something bigger than ourselves, and that hunger is in us. Make no mistake about it, everyone worships something. It may be a false god, but everyone worships something. Whether it be their job, whether it be their hobbies, whether it be their entertainment, their sports teams, themselves. They worship their own way, and they sacrifice for their own way. They sacrifice for all those things. You know, I'm from Georgia, and I like the Georgia Bulldogs, and they didn't do too well yesterday. But I'm not going to sacrifice for them. You know, it's a game. It's a game. But I'm not going to sacrifice for them. I have some hobbies, but I may have to sacrifice some things for them, but I'm not ultimately sacrificing for my hobby. In the Old Testament, the only two words for worship had to do with sacrificing and had to do with bowing down. I mean, if you were saying, I'm going to go to worship, what you were saying is, I'm going to sacrifice. Or when it talked about and Abraham worshiped, it means that he just bowed down to God. Giving ourselves to another. So if you want to know what somebody worships, look at what they sacrifice for. What do they ultimately sacrifice for in their lives? But see, we do that because we are hungry, looking for the ultimate purpose and meaning. In the gospel lesson today, we find the story of the feeding of the 5,000. 5,000 plus. Because if their society is anything like our society, you know, more women show up at church than men. So, you know, if there were 5,000 men, there were probably 6,000 women. I don't know. But there were at least 5,000 people, not counting women and children. The crowd following Jesus. This is our story. This is not just a story about Jesus performing a miracle. This is our story. This is who we are. Because we are looking, we are searching for the one who can feed us, who can fill us, who can give us ultimate meaning in our lives and fulfillment. We find the crowd was following Jesus. And even though he wanted at that moment, he wanted solitude, he wanted to be away with just his disciples, he took the time and he taught them about the kingdom. And he healed their sick and he gave of himself. But they were searching for ultimate meaning. And ever since the Garden of Eden, ever since Adam and Eve were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, we have been searching for a way back to God. You see, we were made to live in a garden. That's what we were made for. We were made to live in this garden, and we blew it. And so we are no longer in the garden. And we're looking for a way back home. As the choir sang about today, we're looking for a way back home. Augustine said, you know, our hearts are restless until it finds its rest in thee. And so until our hearts find rest in God, we will keep searching. And in our search, in our search for significance, in our search for meaning, we find oftentimes that our hearts are in desolate places, in deserted places. Now we come to worship, we come to church out of habit, out of duty. We love to come, we love to be here, we love to sing the songs, we love to hear the choir, the pipe organ, all these things, and that's okay. But oftentimes we come and we are just in a bad place. We feel like we're all alone, that there's nobody else, and nobody may even know that. The person sitting next to you may not have a clue of how alone you are and how desolate and deserted your heart is. We may not even understand that completely ourselves. We just know that we need something. And what we know is that no matter how often we've tried, we know that we cannot find that in ourselves. You know, we are not self-sustaining people. We are not self-originating people. You know, one day I didn't just decide, well, I think I'm going to exist today. No, when you see me, you know that at least at some point there were two others. Right? And you know that behind me were those two others, and behind them were four others. And then eight others. And so on and so forth. We do not originate within ourselves. I didn't even name myself. My parents named me. I have my father's name. So it's not even mine, ultimately. It was given to me. I didn't come up with it. We are not. We cannot find our fulfillment in ourselves. We try. We try hard. And the landscape of humanity is littered with the destruction of people trying to feed themselves, trying to satisfy their own hunger apart from God. All you have to do is watch the news. Read the papers. That we try our own way to find meaning, and we can't. And then what happens when we do that is we end up using other people and leaving a trail of destruction everywhere we go. So this is our story. We don't have the resources. And really and truthfully, you know, we don't ultimately have the resources to feed anybody else except for what's given to us. Jesus looks at the disciples and said, "You feed them." And the disciples, "Are you crazy? There's 5,000 people here. We got 5 loaves and 2 fish. We don't even have enough for ourselves, much less this crowd." So ultimately, we can't even do that ourselves for others except through Jesus. We come today because we're hungry. And my question to you today is, what are you hungry for? Where are you trying to satisfy your hunger? In other people? In other things? How are you satisfying your hunger? God is looking for us. He's looking for us, and he's looking to satisfy our hunger. Like I said, when Adam and Eve blew it, and we had to leave the garden, God looked down on us, and he saw us wandering around. He saw us lost and confused in desert places, in deserted places, far from him. And he says, "I want to do something about that." And so he sent his son Jesus down here into the middle of the mess. And Jesus then has created a path through the wilderness back to God. He's created a way for us back to God. Now, the cross is the way through. And we see the cross, it is like a sign that points us to the way. This is the way we go. It points us to Him. We hunger for that relationship. We hunger for that life of God to be in us. So what are you hungry for today? Where are you unsatisfied in your life today? Jesus says, seek and you shall find. Are you seeking Him? Or are you seeking fulfillment through yourself, through self-fulfillment? What do you worship? What are you hungry for? What do you sacrifice for? Jesus is calling us today to His table. And if you are hungry, I invite you to come and to eat, partake. Receive God's life. If you've never accepted Christ into your life before, I invite you that when you come and you receive the bread, that you receive Christ into your life. Because that, if you're hungry, that's what you're hungry for. And if you've walked with Christ for a long time,